Well, good morning, United, and welcome on this Sunday morning. It's Beach Bum Sunday. If you haven't noticed, a couple of us got a little overboard about what we're dressing like. And this is actually an authentic Hawaiian shirt from my good friend Tony when he was in Hawaii. He picked it up for me. And so I will not be caught in this thing any other Sunday, though. So Hawaiian is not my style, but I'm up for it today. I don't know about you, but does anybody here, have you ever fished before? Raise your hand if you've gone fishing. Speaking of overboard, keep your hand up if you've caught a fish. So a lot of you have caught a fish. Good. Who here likes fishing? Like, hey, I want to go fishing some more. A lot of hands went down. All right, my hand would go down too. So I'm not a huge fan of fishing. I remember being brought fishing by my father, and he wasn't so sure that I would like it because you need to be patient, and that just doesn't run in wolf blood, patience. And so I'm not very patient, and I don't enjoy fishing. So when somebody gave me two fishing rods a couple years ago and for me and my family to enjoy, I wasn't really excited about it, but my son was. And so my son really wanted to go fishing, and I thought, all right, well, let's just get this out of his system, get this over with, and move on with more fun activities in life. Sorry for those that enjoy fishing. But we went to the Outer Banks on this particular summer. We go to the Outer Banks almost every summer on vacation, and we decided to go fishing off a pier. And I said, all right, we're going to go fishing. We'll put the worms on the hook, get some overpriced worms, so forth. And we go out there, and I'm prepping my son, who's about 5 years old, saying, Liam, you know, this is probably, we're probably going to sit for a while and throw this thing out a lot and probably not get many fish, if any at all. And so I was just kind of prepping him for that because he's like me and he wants to just be active and running around and stuff and not sitting with a fishing rod in his hand with nothing happening on the other side. So we get there, we cast out the hook with the worm on it, old-fashioned style, and little did I know or expect, we start to feel a little tug on the end of the rod here, and we start pulling it in, and we pull it in, and out comes a fish. You probably thought I was going to try to build up to something else, like a can or somebody's shoe, but it was a real fish. It was a first try, and I'm like, oh no, this is not good. So I then explained to Liam, like, this is probably like beginner's luck. And I start to explain the concept of beginner's luck to my son. And, you know, this is probably not going to happen again. Don't worry about it. And so get prepared to be bored. So we throw out the hook again, and we pull it in. And sure enough, I was like, see, son, your dad is wise. You know, there's nothing at the end of this thing. We're just going to keep doing this over and over again for the next half hour. Nothing's going to happen. But little did I know, in the next 15 minutes, we would catch 5 fish. And not only did my plan backfire, but we go back to our house. He's bouncing off the walls, and everybody else in the family gets excited about going fishing. So the next day, I have to take all of the kids to go fishing, not just my one son. And this whole plan backfires, and now we're not a fishing family because that's the only time I took him fishing. But everybody's got a fish story. Everybody raised their hand. You have some type of fish story. And how about, have you ever heard of these fish stories or this type of fishing? Has anybody ever heard of extreme aerial bow fishing? Raise your hand if you've heard of this or seen it. We got a picture of it for you. It's pretty crazy. Like, there's a certain type of fish, a carp, that will pop up out of the water, and these guys will go ahead and launch an arrow at it. But sometimes that backfires. So this next picture is the headline that I read this past week, where a jumping carp. So you see the couple there on the back, and you see that carp jumping out of the water, actually lands in that lady's face and breaks her jaw. So, like, this is extreme bowfish hunt, or fishing, so aerial fishing. So does anybody here have a dog? Raise your hand if you have a dog. Has your dog ever caught a fish before? No, I haven't met a dog that has caught a fish either, except for this dog, Hunter. So Hunter has some unique fishing abilities. So if you want to lower your grocery bill, you can go look him up online, see how he does it, see if you can train your dog to help you get some fish in your refrigerator. How about anybody gone hiking before in the mountains? Any hikers here? Do you bring a fishing rod with you when you go hiking in the mountains? Well, apparently in the Rocky Mountains, people will also go, along with their Coors Light, they'll bring their fishing rod with them. And so up there, there are 300 lakes where they drop thousands of fish every year into the 300 lakes. So that's a picture of a plane that drops thousands of fish into the 300 lakes that people go and fish while they hike. So that was a really interesting article. It's hard to top some of these stories, but I think I have one story that tops them all. And it says this, but the Lord provided a fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was inside the fish for 3 days and three nights. Now that's a good fish story. That's the fish story that we're talking about here in the past couple of weeks. We started it last week, and no worries if you missed last week. We're going to catch you up this morning with a short little video to hear where we were at and where we're going this morning in the story of Jonah. So check out the screen right now.
God's story, Jonah. So part of God's story is in the book of Jonah, and it begins like this. God told Jonah, go to the city of Nineveh and tell the people they have been wicked, and they should stop being wicked, or I will destroy them. But Jonah got scared and decided to go to the city of Tarshish by boat. Tarshish is in the opposite direction of where God wanted Jonah to go. Can you imagine running away from God? Anyway, when the boat was at sea, God sent a storm. The storm was so scary that all the sailors thought the ship was going to be destroyed. So they threw a bunch of stuff off the ship. I don't know how less luggage was going to help, but that's what they did. While all of this was happening, Jonah was inside the ship sleeping. The captain saw him and said, "How can you sleep right now? Pray to your God and ask for help." Then the sailors decided to cast lots to find out who was responsible for the storm. Casting lots is a lot like the lottery. Except when lots are cast, whoever wins doesn't always really win. Like this time, when the lot fell to Jonah. The sailors asked him what he had done to cause the storm, and what they should do to make it stop. Jonah said, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea. That will calm the storm." But the sailors didn't want to. They tried really hard to row back to shore, but the ship just didn't go anywhere. So the sailors apologized to God for throwing Jonah overboard. And then they threw him overboard. I don't know if they ever apologized to Jonah, but God is the one who made the scary storm. And if you're gonna apologize to anyone, you should apologize to God. It's just a good idea in general. So as soon as Jonah was off the boat, the storm stopped. I wonder if Jonah thought to himself, "What am I gonna do now?" Well, God had an answer. All of a sudden, a big fish swallowed Jonah. Yep, Jonah was now inside a fish. Things went from bad to worse real quick. Now the Bible says a fish swallowed Jonah. We don't know if it was a whale or something else, but whatever it was, it had to be big enough to swallow a man whole without having to chew. Kids, always chew your food before swallowing. You're not a giant fish. Anyway, Jonah was in the stomach of the fish for 3 days and three nights. Can you imagine being stuck in a dark and stinky place for 3 days straight? Like a porta potty? Well, imagine being inside a big fish, dark and sloshy and really stinky. Basically, a porta potty with fins. After the three stinky days, God made the fish spit out Jonah. Actually, fish can't really spit. Jonah got vomited out. Vomit is also known as puke, barf, pearl, oatmeal seconds, upchuck, blown grits, Ralph, toss cookies, technicolor yawn, and chunder. Basically, the fish got rid of Jonah through its mouth. Do you get the idea? So while stinky Jonah was there on the beach, God told him a second time to go to Nineveh and tell the people to stop being wicked. This time, Jonah went to Nineveh. Listening to God is always a good idea. When he arrived, he told the people that God said they should turn from their evil ways. They believed him, so everyone, and I mean everyone, fasted and put on sackcloth. Fasting is when you don't eat and pray really, really hard. Putting on a sackcloth is putting on a sackcloth. Now, when God saw how they had stopped doing bad things and were really sorry, he decided not to destroy them. And that's the book of Jonah. So in case you missed it, here's...
All right. So you're all caught up now. You understand the story of Jonah. And last week, when we talked about the first part, and we're in part two this week, the part that we were focusing on is what happens when we run from God. Jonah ran from what God told him to do, and last week's message is all about kind of the consequences to that. But more importantly, we see that somebody else is running when we run from God. God's running. He's running after us. See, the storm that was in part of that story and the fish is all part of God's plan to get Jonah back on track with him. It's not a plan to punish Jonah, but it's a plan to help him get back and reconnected into a personal relationship with him. Now, I do want to talk about the fish thing here because it's kind of obvious, like, hey, how believable is it that this can really happen? We hear fish stories. People say, I got a fish that was this big, and then the story the next time is told is this big, and it goes on and on until that fish is bigger. And so this is also a story that people are kind of like, well, is that a fish story too that's not really true or believable? Well, there have been actually verified cases of fish, specifically whales, that have swallowed humans, and humans have survived. One in particular stands out that there's witnesses to. Was there's this guy in the late 1800s. His name was James Barley. He was on a whaling expedition, and unfortunately, part of the whaling expedition is he fell out of the boat and got eaten by the whale. And so the whale swallowed this guy, James, who was totally missing for a total of 36 hours. It was until his buddies, who were part of that whaling expedition, picked up the whale. They didn't know that this was the whale that their friend James was in until they cut him open as part of the standard procedure, and out comes James, you know, alive and kicking, kind of. I mean, he was barely alive and kicking. Now, the story is just a verified story from the 1800s. And we can say maybe for 36 hours, that is really true. And maybe we can even ask Mythbusters to try to do some type of series on, you know, can this actually happen? Is it really possible or not? But here's the thing. It leaves out God. It doesn't account for a God who, out of nothing, created everything. A God who perform miracle after miracle throughout the history of the world, where his people, the Israelites, he split a sea that they were able to walk through to escape slavery, where he then rained food from heaven and fed them, where Jesus took a kid's lunchbox and turned it into a catered meal for 5,000 people. And there's miracle after miracle after miracle in the Bible. And the most important one, the one that our whole faith as a follower of Jesus hinges on, is the resurrection. The fact that Jesus died, he was buried for 3 days and three nights, and then was raised to life. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable too. If that is unbelievable to you, check out our Skeptics Wanted series from a couple months ago where we talk about that on our Easter Sunday service and the credibility of that story. But our whole faith rests on a miracle. You know, if the resurrection isn't true, what's the whole point of us getting together here? And so if God can do that, why can't he have a man be swallowed by a fish and have him be spit out in 3 days later and be alive? Because we have a God who is a God of miracles. Now, even if you're like, this is still too unbelievable to be true, just pay attention to the story this morning. Because there's a lesson in the story that is for all of us to understand the heart of God for us. We do believe that this story is true, and we believe the Bible that is 100% true this morning. But even for those of us that are here this morning that can't buy into this, there's a great story hidden in this, and a great message hidden in this story about God's heart for us. And so last week when we talked about Jonah and going overboard and the whole first part, there was this one key word that stood out to us in the first week. It was repeated four times at least, and it was the word down. Jonah went down to Joppa, then he went down into the boat, then he laid down to sleep, and then he went down overboard into the sea, and he went down into the belly of a fish. See, the thing is, Jonah was told to go to Nineveh and do something for God, and he disobeyed. And we talked about when we disobey and we run from God and do what he tells us not to do, that life goes down sometimes. And so Jonah is a great picture of that, when life goes down. And we pick up the story this morning in Jonah 2. If you grab the Bible in the back, it's on page 436. We also have the verses on the screen for you. You can scroll to it on your phone, however you prefer to read the story along with us. And we're just going to go in chapter 2, starting in verse 1, and get a picture of what happens with Jonah inside the fish. And it says this: "From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God." And this is what he says: "In my distress, I called out to the Lord, and he answered me. From the deep, in the realm of the dead, I called for help, and you listened to my cry." So he's reflecting back to his time in the fish. And what's interesting is, up until this point, he's a person who follows God. He's a prophet who speaks on behalf of God. And yet, through all of the things that he's been through this storm, through being thrown overboard, through drowning in the sea, he doesn't cry out to God at all in any of those moments. But it's not until he gets into the belly of this fish that his first cry goes out to the Lord. You know, the video there showed, you know, a fish's belly being like a porta potty. And it's a great visual of like how stinky and dark it is inside the belly of a fish for Jonah. And sometimes life can be like that. It can stink. Things aren't going our way. And it's in those moments that sometimes maybe God would have us ask a question. Like, God, are you trying to get my attention about something that's going on in life? Is this situation intended for a bigger purpose? Are you trying to get me back on track? Have you ever considered that the storms that are going on in your life is not God punishing you or coming after you, but God trying to get you back on track with him? Because I think that's what's happening here in Jonah. And maybe the circumstances that you're going through are your big fish in life. Do you have a big fish that's happening to you right now? But the key word that we see as Jonah encounters this big fish is cry. It says he cried out to God. It's the moment things became clear for him. He cries out. And this is what he says in his prayer as he goes on. It's a real graphic, raw, and real prayer where Jonah's getting honest with God. And he says, "You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I've been banished from your sight." So just think of some of these words and phrases that Jonah's using. He feels like he's been banished from the sight of God. Do you ever feel that way in life? Like, God doesn't care about you so much that he's not even looking at you. And then he says, "Yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The engulfing waters, they threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down." So Jonah's talking about, hey, he went to the bottom of the sea here. And this is his experience. It says, "The earth beneath barred me in forever." I mean, Jonah, in reflecting about what happened to him, he was thinking, I was as good as dead. In that moment, I didn't think I was going to survive. He uses some other words and phrases here that I want to highlight. One is "in my distress." And the Hebrew word for "in my distress" is often used to talk about women having labor and going through labor and those labor pains. So if you're a woman who has given birth to children, you can understand that. We've had three ladies in the past month give birth to newborn children here. So go ahead and ask them about their experience and they can give you a window into Jonah's life. Actually, don't do that. They probably don't want to relive it. But that's what Jonah's thinking about. This is how much it hurt, not just physically, but even emotionally and spiritually. He's talking about this type of distress and pain. And then he says this phrase, "the realm of the dead." And the Hebrew word there is maybe a word that you've heard before, Sheol. Sheol is also translated in the Bible often as hell. And what Jonah is saying is it hurt so bad, it hurt like hell. This time of my life when I was sinking down to the sea, life hurt like hell. Is your life hurting that way right now? Can you remember a time in your life where life hurt like hell? Probably for a lot of us we can. Things that have happened to us. And this sets the stage for two huge turning points in the book of Jonah. And the one is right next verse 2. And Jonah goes on to say, "but you." I just want to stop there because any time in the Bible where there's a "but you" or a "but God" or a "but when" in the story of the Bible means there's something huge coming. There's a game-changing event that's about to happen. And that's what Jonah talks about. And he goes on to say, "you brought my life up from the pit." And we see like a contrast from last week where when you run from God, you go down, but here Jonah cries out to God and life starts to go up for him. You just see just the words that are used here to give us a picture of what it means to relate to God. And when he cries out, "but God" happens. And because "but God," "but you, God," work, life starts to go up. Can you relate to that too? You could say, "I was down and out, but God intervened. But God showed up. I was so far from God, but God brought me up. My marriage, it was as good as dead, but God. Or I was addicted to porn, but God. Maybe my boyfriend broke my heart, but God. Or the doctor had this report, but God." Do you need a "but God" in your life this morning? Don't count him out. Because Jonah's shown us that when you cry out to God, he hears your prayer. Look at this next phrase. It says, "when my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord." So he talks about, I'm remembering God now. I haven't up until this point, but I remember God and my prayer came to you. Meaning, God, you heard my prayer. I knew that you were there. When I cried out, you did something and you worked. And we know that because, well, the fish vomited, upchucked, whatever that phrase is that you want to use, Jonah out into dry land. It's one of my favorite parts. My favorite part is this very next phrase in verse 1 of chapter 3 where it says, "Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time." Did God ever come to you a second time? Like, were you screwed up? And you're like, there's no way I'm going to get out of this one. But God showed up again, a second time. Maybe even a third or fourth time, because it's not just one second time, but it's endless second times that God shows up. See, the God that we worship here at United is a God of the second chance. A God who has endless second chances for us. And he shows up to Jonah and he says, "I come a second time," and this is what he says. He says, "Arise." So you see again, arise. You see this theme of up. Jonah's life is going back up. "Go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it the message that I tell you." So God comes and just really simply, he gives him the same assignment again, to go back to this place called Nineveh. He gets a fresh start, give it a second try. And God does the same thing with us. Every time we screw up, the word of the Lord comes a second time. Maybe you need a second chance this morning. Maybe you need a new beginning. You could be thinking, "You don't understand how bad I screwed up. Could I be too far gone?" I want to point you to the language that Jonah used when he said, "I was barred in by the sea forever." I think in that moment he thought he was too far gone. He thought it was over. But God is a God of the second chance. And the word of the Lord came to him a second time. It didn't come to you a second time. "But I had an affair. Isn't that like really bad in church to do?" But God came a second time. "I've been away from church for too long. You know, I know better. I should be reading my Bible and coming to church more often." Well, the word of the Lord came a second time. "I can't seem to break this bad habit or this addiction in my life. I'm never going to change. I keep falling into this." But God showed up a second time. This is what you see all throughout, not just in Jonah, but all throughout the Bible, that God is a God of the second chance. And he gives all of us a second chance this morning. And he gives Jonah this mission to go back to Nineveh. And the question that we have to ask is, why is God so relentless to get this guy to this place? Why does he just choose somebody else? Well, because there's a great story with this guy to get to this place. But he also loves the people in this place, Nineveh. God's heart is to love many people, all people. And Nineveh represented a huge city in that time. It was around 120,000 people, which is a huge city. And God's heart is for this people who are very far from him. None of them worshiped God, is for them to come to him. That's why we believe in church planting here at United. We started this church a year ago. We want to be part of other churches starting because we want to start churches where people aren't going to church. Because that's the heart of God that we see in Jonah, and it's the heart of God all throughout the Bible. And so Jonah goes on a 3-day hike. He gets to Nineveh. He tells them this message. He speaks it out to them. And he's probably thinking, there's no way these guys are going to respond. But they do. And all the people start fasting and praying. And not only that, the word spreads to the king, the highest individual in the land. And this is what happens when the word reached the king of Nineveh. It says, "He arose from his throne, he removed his robe, and then he covers himself with sackcloth and sat in ashes." Now, we had that picture of sackcloth, kind of a little weird, like what's the deal with the sackcloth? In this time and culture, it's something worn in a time of deep sadness and grief. I mean, in funerals here, we wear black, but there they wore sackcloth. Or a national disaster comes and we fly our flag at half mast, but they would wear sackcloth. It just represents this deep grieving and sorrow. And what are they grieving about? The fact that they've sinned against God. These evil, wicked people in Nineveh have sinned against God. And their king calls out for them to, let's grieve together and humble ourselves before this God, this guy named Jonah. And he says this, he says, "He issued a proclamation and published it through Nineveh. By the decree of the king and his nobles, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything." So this is really interesting. Not just guys and gals, but even their pets. you know, and their livestock, not able to eat anything. This is how they made a living, was their cattle, and they're having their cattle fast from food and water. It says, let them not drink food or water, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth, and let everyone urgently call on God. Let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. For who knows? God may turn and relent and turn from his fierce anger so that we may not perish. I mean, these guys are not going halfway with this type of repentance and grieving. They're going all out. I mean, not just them, but their animals. I don't know about you, but I have two cats. And I try to envision wrapping them up in sackcloth. There's no way I'm going to survive that moment. So imagine you taking your pets and your livestock and covering everything up with sackcloth and fasting and praying. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Even people that worship God would have a hard time coming to this conclusion in their life. And yet these people that are known as evil and wicked, they go all in. They flush the drugs, they pour out the liquor, they burn the porn, they give money to the poor. Let's do whatever we can to get right with this God. So here's the big question. What's God going to do? Is it possible that he would forgive people like the Ninevites? And of course, like, yeah, we're in church, of course God forgives. But let's just back up a little bit and talk about the Ninevites, because they were really bad. Maybe you think I'm being uncharitable by calling them evil and wicked. You just expect to hear those words in a church. But this is how evil they were. Like I talked about last week, different war crimes, sex crimes, corruption. Like, let me just give you a window into the war crimes part of it. They would regularly bury people alive. So that was like option one of what we should do with our prisoners. But if they were in a mood for something else, what they would do is then skin the prisoners alive, impale them on a pole, and let them sit outside and die in the sun. But if they didn't like that option, there was a more fun option for them to pursue by taking their prisoners and boiling them in tar. Those were the things that the Ninevites did. If this was turned into a real life movie these days, people would be running out of the theater appalled by what they're seeing. And it's just the beginning of their wickedness. So we could judge Jonah in this story of like, hey, you didn't go do what God told you to do. Like, no wonder. The Ninevites are really evil, wicked people. He was probably scared of them. And he probably thought, there's no way anything is going to change anyway. Can God really forgive people this evil? Well, when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented. And he didn't bring on them the destruction that he had threatened. It seems like the answer is yes. Think about the Ninevites in your life. You're like, I doubt they're your neighbors. I doubt you go to work with people that are like the Ninevites. I'm talking about people that make the headlines in the news. Maybe some of those folks, and you're like, you know what? Can God really forgive that person? Isn't it too little too late, you know, for these Ninevites? Well, that's not really a phrase in the playbook of the Bible. And it's not a phrase that God lives by. And God does forgive anybody. I mean, think about the three sets of characters we have here. We have sailors, we have Jonah, and we have the Ninevites. And all three of them in these stories here, they all cry out to God. The sailors cry out to Jonah's God. Then Jonah cries out to his God in the belly of the fish. And then the Ninevites cry out to God. And for a whole bunch of people who were going down one moment, as soon as they cry out to God, their life all goes back up. See, and these three different groups of people give us a different window into maybe where we're coming from this morning. The sailors, they knew nothing about God. They were not interested in God. They had no concept of God. And maybe you're not really interested in God and you're not sure exactly why you're here. You came along with a friend or a family member. You can kind of relate to a sailor. It's just doing your own thing and disconnected from God. And yet Jonah shows up on their boat, who's actually a hypocrite, and the first time they hear about a God who made the heavens and the earth, they start to cry out to his God, and they become saved. Then Jonah, maybe you can relate to him. You got all this head knowledge. You know a lot about God. So on the other hand, different from these sailors, like, I know the whole routine of this church thing. I know the Bible inside and outside, yet your heart's pretty cold to him. Like, you're not as interested in following him in your life and really submitting every area of your life to him. And yet we see Jonah crying out to God, and God saves him. Or maybe you can identify with the Ninevites, and you don't feel like the Ninevites are out there, but maybe you feel like I'm one of those guys. Like, can God really forgive some of the things that I've done? Is God that loving and that forgiving that he would save somebody like me? And the answer is a resounding yes to all three categories of people. You can come to God and cry out to mercy to him, and he will save you. It's the message of the entire Bible. It's the message of Jonah. And if you've never cried out to God, if you've never said the words, I need you, Jesus, God's been waiting your whole life for you to say those words to him. Because the Bible is a book of second chances. Our God is a God of second chances. He's for you. And when you cry out to him with whatever words come to mind, just expressing your need for him in your life, your desire to be in a relationship with him, he'll answer you and he will forgive you. And maybe he wants to help you see that the things in your life aren't him trying to punish you, but him always seeking out to rescue you. And merciful acts. We use this word mercy a lot. Merciful acts, a merciful God, a God of mercy. What exactly is mercy? Well, there's illustrations all throughout this book of Jonah of mercy. But mercy is God withholding punishment that we deserve. So he's withholding punishment from the Ninevites. He's withholding punishment from Jonah. And that is what mercy is. And we've experienced mercy primarily through Jesus Christ. Because Jesus, in our place, took the punishment that we deserve. And maybe for a lot of us here who have been doing this church thing or following Jesus for a number of years, we get that. I understand mercy, yet God's not going to punish me. He punished Jesus in my place. And you kind of know, like, that's how you get in the door of following Jesus, that God's merciful to you and you'll be forgiven. But my question is, have you forgotten that God is still merciful to you today? Because when I think about being a child of God, you know, children grow up. You know, they go from being a newborn to an infant and a toddler and young children. And you feel like children at some point should know better. And I think sometimes as Christians, we feel like we should know better. So God's not being merciful to me right now. He's punishing me. Think about it this way. I've got 5 kids, and my youngest kid just learned how to ride his bike. And he's 5 years old. I took him out in the backyard. In like 5 minutes, he's off and riding without training wheels. It was amazing. None of my other kids were that great at riding the bike the first time. And not only that, the next day he's going on a run with me. So he's riding his bike while I'm running around the neighborhood. And so he's going a couple miles. And then within a couple of weeks, he's going on the NCR trail over out in Timonium for 9 miles with me. This little 5-year-old dude riding 9 miles within a couple of weeks. He was awesome. But my other kids were not as good at riding the bike. And not to knock on them, but they just weren't as good. And so I would do what every parent does, or anybody who's trying to teach their child how to ride a bike. You would kind of teach them through the instruction. You'd hold the bike. You'd run with them. You kind of help them along in the process. And you know, after a couple of days or weeks trying to do this with my other kids, I just started to get angry. I was like, what's wrong with you? Like, why can't you just ride this bike? You're a wolf, and wolves ride bikes faster than you're learning how to ride this bike. I've taught you how to do this. I've showed it to you. I've walked with you. Get on the bike and ride. I didn't do that at all. I'm just totally kidding. You're like, holy smokes, this guy is a tough dad. But isn't that how we think about God? What's wrong with you? I've been telling you and walking with you and running with you and helping you ride this thing. You keep falling down. What's your problem? That's not God. God's not out to get you. He's not angry at you. That's not mercy. Mercy is what every parent does. That's okay. Get back up. Because he's the God of second chances. I'll help you. Because he's the God that's for you. I'm going to walk with you because he's the God that sent Jesus so that we can have a personal relationship with God. Jesus is God with us. That is what a God of mercy looks like, because mercy triumphs over punishment. If you're familiar with a God of punishment in the story of God, then you've been reading the wrong story, because the God that we worship is the God of a second chance, who's incredibly merciful. And when you are loved like this, it'll change the way you live life. What motivates you to love God more isn't guilt. It's his amazing love. What helps you to say, hey, come to United and learn about a God who's for you and cares about you and wants to be in a relationship with you. He doesn't want to be hard on you and beat you up. He wants to cheer you on in life. Like, that's a God that people will want to be in a relationship with, not a God who's after them and punishing them. And that's the God that's offered for us all to have a relationship with in the Bible. And when we cry out to this God, life goes up. And I want to give you an invitation just in the next moment, maybe one of the most important moments in your life that you can make to get back up, to actively call on God. Maybe you've done that before. I've called on God, but you're far from him. You've run away and you're back and you're discouraged. And hopefully this morning you're hearing a message that God, he's a God of second chances. If you cry out to him, you don't have to be perfect. He'll unwind the seaweed that's wrapped around your head, pull you out of the pit, and he'll give you a second chance. But if you're running from God this morning, if you've never said yes to him, this morning could be the morning that you turn to God. You cry out to him. You say, God, come into my life. I need you. And I want to give you an opportunity to make that decision this morning. We're going to just have a video that plays. It's a song with some lyrics that come up that talk about this God of mercy, not a God of punishment. And as we listen to this song together, we're going to pass what we call communion. And communion is an opportunity for us to tangibly remember Jesus Christ, his body and blood that was given on our behalf so that we can experience mercy and that we could be forgiven of our sins. I just want you to have some time alone with God to receive his love and to understand his mercy for you as we take communion together. If communion is not something that you're comfortable with taking this morning, what you can do is just go ahead and pass the trays along down the rows. And when you do get that cup, there's two of them that have a cracker and some juice. You can just go ahead and take that in your own time during this time of this song that's playing. And then we're going to stand and just close by singing together. Let me pray.